Hey guys, as my 8th season of Interviews with the Haunting Masters comes to a close, I want to thank you all for the support that you've given me, and I want to wish you a happy holidays. Keep those reviews coming, those comments coming, helps me keep the podcast free. And the last few episodes of the season, it's dedicated to all the late season archery hunts, all those guys still out there grinding it out through the end of the year and into January. So we're going to be talking a lot about mule deer, coos deer, Arizona, New Mexico, some of the other states that have some of these late season hunts, and hope you enjoy it. We're going to jump into this next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, the number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about late season mule deer hunting here in Arizona during the archery season, December, January. It's a really good time of year to get out. It's actually my favorite time to get it, year to get out, period, for any species. It's just, the weather's amazing. Just an awesome hunt. Awesome hunt, spot and stalk, lots of action, get to see a lot of big bucks, go on a lot of stalks. So we're brought on Eric Lopez today to talk about it. And I'm going to let Eric kind of give a little rundown about himself, but a little background about Eric. He started guiding for Dwayne Adams, and his dad and his uncle have been guiding with Dwayne for many years. And so Eric knows his stuff. He's been around big buck killers his whole life, and he's no stranger to killing big bucks himself. What's going on, Eric? How are you?
What's going on, man? I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. This is podcast number 6 for me in the last 2 days. I'm kind of cramming them all in.
Busy.
I want to get out all these late season stuff right before I get them all set up to air before I leave for South Dakota. I'm going on a mule deer slash whitetail hunt there. I actually got some private ground. I've been hunting public land there for the last, on and off. I've been there 6 times. I might actually lease some private ground to run some hunts off myself. I got a buddy of mine he's a cattle rancher, and I made friends with him several years back, and he's actually came out with me a couple of times, ran camera with me, and he's like, hey, I got this private land, several thousand acres, got whitetail and muleys on it, and nobody hunts it, so I'm gonna go take a look at it, see if it's worth a damn, and maybe I might guide a couple of clients on it in November next year. So
Nice. Okay. That mostly like archery or a decent rifle hunt up there too?
Rifle is by draw only. You can do some tree stand hunting in the creek bottoms, but it's mostly like hunting the JPs over here, just like that cedar, peony and juniper looking stuff. Real broken up country. Okay. Kind of reminds me a lot of like Wyoming. Look, it's right on the border of Wyoming, actually, right by Gillette.
Right.
So it's real prairie. It's real prairie like, or high prairie, high desert. So it's mostly a spot and stalk hunt.
We're gonna say a lot of some good glassing in there, glassing areas, some pots, and good old fashioned spot and stalk. Can't beat that though.
No, it's a good time. I actually killed my biggest buck about 30 minutes from there. Jesus, 2001, 2002, no. Yeah. 2002 or 2003. I shot 182 inch mule deer there. That was my biggest muley buck with a bow. And, I've managed to kill several really good whitetail from there. Two of which are spot and stalk. I have the one from 2015. I haven't released that film yet. I've been trying to put this film together for a long time. I just keep getting sidetracked. But as spot and stalk whitetail, you don't get to see that too often, which is kind of cool. So I'm gonna put that one out eventually. Well, give us a little rundown about yourself and and then we'll jump into some questions.
Absolutely. Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
First podcast too here too, so I'm excited. But yeah, I'm an Arizona kid, born and raised. Like you said, my dad, Al Lopez, and my uncle, Frank Lopez, have been guiding for Dwayne for a good, 30 years pretty much now. So kind of learned, they're, been in and out. I knew my dad since I was a kid, since I was 10 years old, 11 years old or so. A lot of coos deer hunting, a lot of mule deer hunting, some elk hunting in there as well. Become more of a passion, just recently got into guiding as well for Dwayne. So my first year this past year in Kaibab. So we killed a nice buck in Kaibab, and that was my first time with Dwayne, guiding actually. So been known my dad's been up there for year after year, always see pictures and, hear stories and stuff like that. So always been excited to. It was pretty humbling to do that myself and, have my pops there and my uncle and Dwayne as well. He's always been an uncle to me too. So it was good,
That's
man.
Awesome.
It was good and good stuff. But I think today we're talking about, going to get into some mule deer archery hunting, I think.
Yeah.
Some late season action. Right.
Before we jump into that, let's hear about this big buck. I mean, that thing, when Dwayne first sent me that picture and I was like, man, I was so in love with that buck, man. I wouldn't kill to shoot a buck that had that, all that mass. I mean, he's real narrow and everything. Like, it's crazy. That's a 200-inch buck that has a frame, has like a 150-inch frame, It's like,
Exactly. It's so ridiculous how of a typical normal frame, you can kill any type of mule deer, four-point mule deer from southern to northern Arizona, and you're going to see that typical frame. Nothing special about the frame, but that mass, it was just, I caught my eye when I first seen it. Even just holding it too, once we killed it, it was like bladed, the G2s and everything from base to tip, it was just super thick, once we killed it, walking up to a deer, especially a buck of that caliber, it don't matter, what type of deer or where you're at, you're going to notice, and get that feeling like, wow, this is a lot bigger than what looks in my, in the glass, like walking up to it, just a little bit more of a different feeling. So, my client and I, we shook hands, high five and everything, got the excitement once walking up to it. And yeah, that buck of a, I mean, I would love to kill that buck myself. I was all kind of jealous of Abe there and, taking pictures and talking about it, driving back to camp and everything to show everybody. And it was, it was one of those times you kind of just take in and pretty much, show it off, celebrate that type of buck. It was pretty massive of a buck, like I said, from base to tip. So there was, I never seen or even been a part of a kill of that caliber as well. So it was exciting.
Yeah. Dwayne told me it was 14 inches up there at the top.
Pretty much.
Right where he forked 14 inches around or something like that?
Pretty much. Yeah, I think we taped it that night. And I mean, typical frame, it was not even, maybe barely even 25, 26 in width.
Yeah.
And, just a regular 4-point with some little kickers off the G2, but just the blades, the mass. I can't explain. You have to actually hold it, yourself to actually experience it and that weight of it to know what I'm talking about. But yeah, just right on ridiculous type of mass. I can't even explain it.
You probably did that deer a favor. He probably had a neck ache. You put him out of his misery.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a pretty pretty big body, pretty big thick. And I think it was a Kaibab buck. So we checked it in and let's see here. And that check-in, it was like an older gentleman that, talking about it, scoring it, taking little tips here or numbers and stuff like that. He had said, and he'd been doing it for years, he had mentioned. So he had mentioned it was about a 5 year, which is, compared to what I'm used to. I'm used to kind of hunting, more southern mule deer. They're not as, thick and big. They don't get that big that young anyway. So my assumption of it was, this deer is at least 8 to 9 years old. And that's an older deer, how thick and grown it was. And guys, like maybe 5.5, 6 years. And I was like, well, kind of, going back to the habitat and the feed and everything, the Kaibab compared to the southern, southern mule deer.
Genetics
So
and habitat, man. The dove
pretty.
do it every time. Could you imagine that deer in 4 more years when he's a 9-year-old? I mean, Jesus Christ.
Just imagine, yeah. You just, it's your, you're in your sleep and you're watching sheep jump over that fence and you're gonna be seeing that mule deer hopping over. So it's in your dreams type of buck at that caliber. It's
For
pretty cool.
sure. Well, cool. So want to talk a little bit about. So most of the guys are obviously we're not going to be able to go archery hunting in the Kaibab. So most of the guys are going to be hunting the desert in January. What are some of the things you're looking for, like habitat wise? What kind of terrain? I mean, we have very different. I mean, the desert changes a lot from where are you looking for big bucks?
Well, in that, I mean, obviously in the rut, you're looking for the does. You're gonna expect, a group of does. You spot a group of does here and there. You're gonna expect a buck to come out, a buck to be with them. So, habitat, I try to look for, if you're in the southern parts, maybe some, even borderline central, just a regular type of, feed from the tall grass to the cliff rose, juniper berries, brush oak, stuff that they like to kind of hang around those pockets too. And those, I mean, pockets too, a lot of detail. Then we can go into a big discussion on pockets. So, what I mean by pockets, I mean between rows, get away from, the action, from all the, rifle hunts action off the main road, stuff like that, the side by sides, been, the quads, road hunters type of deals. I understand it's fun to do that, but deer, the smarter, bigger bucks like to get away from that, from what I see. So
For
those
sure.
pockets between, little walk in, not even, too far of a walk in, I'm talking just, a couple hundred yards off the road. You find a little bowl, a couple little cuts that no one can't really see from the roads. Get in there and, there's gonna be usually this, the little comfort zone basically in that type of zone there. So
No, makes sense. Smart. Sorry about that. My brain shut off for a second. I was going to ask you, you started mentioning like vegetation and stuff like that, and my brain went off. And I started thinking about a question that I wanted to ask you, and now I cannot remember what that question was. So that's why I had a brain there. But another thing I was going to ask you is, in your experience and how far away from permanent water this time of year do you see the bucks and does?
I mean, actually, you'd be surprised how far they'll go without water this time of year. Compared to the August, September archery hunt, they're going to be around that water within, at least a square mile or so. So I would say outside of that, a couple miles, especially in, the area you're hunting in, if there's, different water tanks within, a few miles within each other, they might be in the middle of it or even down, between another tank down the way, another, 5, 10 miles or so. So, I would say mule deer, they're more of like a traveling herd. I mean, they're not going to be as compared to, coos whitetail where they have their comfort zones. They have their own little, set zone where they kind of stick around. Mule deer will travel, especially water. I would say try not to even focus on water. Focus on, we're talking like the rut time. Focus on the does, on the number, on the density of deer. Like I said, find those pockets. So water would be good, but I would say it's not as a priority to those deer at that time of year. They get big headed, especially the bigger bucks that come out, and it's easier to see them, pop up and find those deer and kill them.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about mule deer behavior. What are like some characteristics about mule deer that you could like count on? You know they do this or they do that, and this is something that you could capitalize on.
Yeah, mule deer. I mean, my experience, I'm a big koozier guy. You know, I like to focus on a certain little pocket here and there, and I, you know, seeing deer and hunting deer and focus on one buck at a time where they can stick around. And I can go back in that same spot and hunt that deer. But mule deer, it's kind of different, I would say. You know, they travel some ways. You know, sometimes, for example, there is this buck. I hunt a lot of, like I said, like southern areas. So we found this wide buck. We did name him wide. He was a 4 point. Never see him in the rifle hunts. Never. You know, around the same pockets, the same little glassing areas from different areas, different angles. You know, see the same does, it seems like, but he's never there during the rifle hunts. And then, you know, come December, January time, come that rut, and all of a sudden, oh, there's white, he's back. And you know, kind of depends on, you know, the habitat, the feed, the weather. I think the weather is a number one priority too. You have to really pay attention to, especially that time of year, for mule deer. So they might follow that. They might follow, you know, the does. You know, the hotter doe. There might be one. You know, a few miles down there, they might get a little scent, and you know, off they go. They're out of your little area where you think they're gonna be in. You know, a couple months back, and all of a sudden they're. You know, your buddy says, "Hey, I saw your buck. You know, down the road, he's over here." You know, which could be 5, 10 miles down the road. He's chasing some other doe. So it could kind of vary, but I know they travel, so I wouldn't really, you know, bank a mule deer, you know, mature buck on in one spot, you know, year by year. So.
No, that I definitely have experienced that a bunch. Honestly, when I go scouting for mule deer, and I know I'm going to be hunting the rut, I don't even look for bucks because I know, A, 90% of the spots that I'm going to be looking at, they're not going to be there. And B, if I do find one, he's probably not going to stay there. So I look for does. I've always done that. I go and look for the biggest doe densities. I look for good habitat. So little biology lesson about deer, all deer. Whitetail, mule deer, whatever. The bucks actually give way to the does and the fawns to have better habitat.
Feed,
They will
yeah.
go, they will actually leave the better habitat to the does and the fawns who need more of that, and will go off solo and go either a lesser habitat. And people always think, oh, they want to go someplace that's more secluded or whatever. I mean, there's probably some what are you going to truth to that? But in essence, they're giving up the better habitat to the does. And so the does are usually going to stay in those same spots. If you find them in October or you find them in November, they're pretty much going to be there unless sometimes you'll
Right,
see
right.
a buck will run a doe off, 5, 6 miles and just keep chasing her around, but they'll eventually come back to that one spot. So yeah, finding the does is, it's always been a huge tactic of mine.
Yeah, keep thinking that. Just to piggyback off of that too, prime example, like, you know, higher country, the Kaibab, for example, which we experienced on this past hunt. You know, the Kaibab, they're the, like, the traveling herd. You know, they follow the feed from the top to the bottom, you know, to the plateaus, to the actual feed is going to be there during that winter time when the snow comes in, stuff like that. So this early hunt, we had a hard time locating the bucks, to be honest. It was tough finding that bachelor group, you know, of those mature bucks, you know, 3, 4 points, you know, the 160 to 180, 190 bucks that hang around together. So they were pretty much spread out, and we're, you know, as a group chat, you know, us and the guys were, it has to be the feed. You know, the oaks up top, they were all dry. It wasn't much rain before. It was a colder start to the winter, I think. And up top, you know, there wasn't as many deer we see at this time of year. So they were kind of spread out. You know, what I focus on too, was to hunt low. And you know, expert to, like, you know, there's no feet up top, they're going to be, you know, let's start moving down. We got to get, you know, like you said, you know, those bigger bucks may have, you know, led the way, you know, follow the feed, follow the habitat to get those doe fawns, you know, to more feed and more their comfort zone to hang around. So which it did kind of prove it too. We saw more, noticed more deer down low. Some guys are seeing up deer, you know, up top, but For the most part, you know, it was that first at least 2-3 days of the that Kaibab hunt. It was tough to locate the bucks, and figure that out. So we that's what we find out. So, you know, let's look at the feed. Let's try down low, and that's when we eventually started going down lower to, you know, where they're actually going to be in the later hunts when that, you know, the snow is up top and they all start moving down, which it was, you know, there's more does down those pockets down low. And eventually we started, you know, we'll see a buck here and there. And once we made that adjustment, that's when, my client Abe, that's when you found that buck and he was low, you know, he was making his way down the hill and we, you know, took advantage of that opportunity for sure. So, just
nice.
Kind of piggyback off that the habitat move. Definitely, it's a great point there.
Cool. You mentioned paying attention to the weather. What's ideal weather for you?
Oh man, if wind was not in the question, this would be a perfect world. When I say weather, I'm actually referring to wind. Are the biggest thing. It's a huge factor. It's the biggest factor, I think, in shoot, not just hunting, but, you know, fishing, if you do that, or, you know, sports, you know, your everyday life. It affects a lot of things. We also do need it too in, you know, like you said, in a biological way, but, wind, especially archery, that's like your main ingredient to be successful, I would say. You know, even, I mean, what I do is, you know, maybe a day or two before the hunt, an archery hunt, even the rifle hunt too, you know, look at the weather, look at the wind. If that wind's going to be blowing, you know, 30 miles an hour from the north, you know, that next day, that's your game plan right there. Don't even hunt the north sides. You know, they're not going to be in the wind.
Right.
They're going to be in the south side. So kind of that's what I kind of like, you know, in my mind, I just have a couple, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C based off of that wind. Structure for the, you know, for that first night, first day of the hunt. You know, I'm going to look at and focus on that out of the wind type of area. So, you know, maybe I have that pocket where I'm going to, you know, I want to go into, and there might be a deer or up in there in that little space, but I'm going to focus on looking at that south side if that wind's coming from the north. So.
No, makes sense. I tell people all the time, if it's over 15 miles an hour, you need, and even sometimes less than that, but glass into the wind, because you're automatically looking at the wind breaks.
Exactly.
And I always kind of knew about that, but it really hit home for me. I had a late season archery elk tag here in Flagstaff. I had a 7 East tag. And man, it was blowing like son of a bitch. It was cold and just, I mean, the wind was 30, 40 miles an hour all day long. And, you know, I just wasn't seeing much. And then finally I'm like, you know what? I know it's cold and it sucks just being blasted in the face, but I turned and I started looking at the mountainside with the wind, you know, hitting me straight in the face, and all of a sudden, boom. Bull there, bull there, bull there, cows here, you know. And I was like, you know, there's something to this, you know. And I ever since then, ever since that's 2011, I think. Yeah, ever since that hunt, I really now like that's like a as soon as I see it, the wind over a certain, you know, certain speed, automatically I flip the binos around and I start looking right into the wind because I know that's where they're gonna be. So.
Exactly. Yeah, kind of like if you think about it this way, like your pain, their comfort. You know, when you're trying to actually hunt them, you know, you have to. You know, no one likes when you're looking, like you said, blowing in your face, blowing your hat off. You have to hold your binos steady. But in essence, they're on that side where there's no wind, so you kind of have to put up with it. But like I said, for the most part, there they are. You know, it does pay off to get through that. Yeah, especially for you know any. You know, newcomers coming into hunting, especially archery and that rut hunt. I mean, that'd be my main tip to like, number one, you know, killer key would pay attention to that weather, you know, it's going to be like the, you know, a day before, you know, look at it and just kind of make your game plan beforehand. So, you know, and like you said, you know, to, you know, first light, look at those, you know, comfort zones, you know, maybe looking to the wind or look into the sun, but you know, they're gonna be right there.
Yeah, the sun's the other thing. I mean, that, on the earlier hunts, that's something I always key into, you know, but the problem is I can't glass into the sun. There's something about my eyes. Like I can do it for about 5 minutes and then I'm done. So that's why I don't even mess around with the early hunts anymore. Glass and stalk here in Arizona for that very reason. I can't do it. You know, and it's the opposite during the late season hunts where those deer are going to be on the sunny faces because they're trying to warm up as opposed to getting into shade. So no, yeah, it's definitely something to key into. If you have a couple of tricks that you use during the archery season to score a buck, is there something that you do? Can you share those with us?
Absolutely. Dude, I kind of bang off of not making the same mistake as you did, you know, the hunt before or the year before. You know, kind of learn that trick would be just experience. You know, try to capitalize on what you've done before, learn from that. And just don't, I mean, not to make it so difficult, you know, just get out there, you know deer, learn the deer and learn from your mistakes. And, you know, archery rut season, it's a great, I think it's like one of the better hunts in Arizona. You know, you have variety, you have a chance to kill that, you know, 170 plus 180 plus type of buck, you know, that'll come out and show himself. But, tricks wise, it's all experience, to be honest. And I mean, there may be some talent you may be, you know, experienced more than others, or, you know, maybe having a, you know, a point where you feel confident enough to pull something off like that and, you know, have the stars align and have that arrow, you know, go where you want it to go. And, yeah, first off would be experience. Other trick, it may be luck. Some guys get lucky, you know, like a guy like myself, I've never been the guy to, you know, drive down a road first light and, oh, there's a buck right there. Let's get off and I'll take that one and have that time and that luck to pull that off. I'm more of the, you know, the blue collar to put the work in, walk 2 miles, 3 miles and maybe, you know, work for a chance of that caliber type of buck that, you know, so luck has something to do with it too, but. And especially putting yourself in the position would be a good thing to talk about too. You know, the right optics, the right equipment, you know, have the right idea of what you want to do and utilize your gear to the best.
Right.
So.
Yeah, now gear goes a long way out west for sure.
Yeah, out west.
Tell me about that big buck that's behind you on the wall, the big muley. Actually, that's a big coos buck there too, man. That's a
stud. Here we go, yeah.
Stud coos right buck. There? Yeah. What's that? Tell me a story about that big 4 point.
I'm glad you asked. So this 4 point, this muley, this is my brother's buck, Joseph Lopez. He killed this in the strip about 2 years ago, I want to say, rifle hunt. And he's one of those guys, little side note here. He's one of those guys that I don't even think he had a point. His first time putting in, hey, I'm going to put in I'm going to go big. So that next year he got drawn and got that strip tag and they capitalized. But yeah, it's a strip buck. I think let's see here. They taped it at, I want to say, 199, 200 on the dot, something like that.
Wow. That's a big buck, man.
So yeah, they killed first day. So the story on that is, you know, the hunt opened up on a Friday. I had to work that Friday. Had all my gear packed. You know, had like the next at least 4 or 5 days off that next week. So you know, I'm game. I'm gonna head up there. We're gonna hunt this strip hard. My first time on the strip. You know, and that Friday night I was at a cousin's house in Phoenix. You know, he lives off the 17, mm-hmm. right there in the valley. So. You know, my first game plan was, you know, get up Saturday morning after work and, you know, head straight up there. Be, you know, just get a little head start off the 17, that freeway, go through Flagstaff, get up there.
Right.
So Friday evening, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, everything's packed. I'm ready to go. Game plan set, gas, you know, truck gassed up and everything. And that night I get a call from my brother. Say, hey, we killed today. So, you know, that kind of ruined the whole game plan, which is always happy for him. But he ended up taking that buck first day, first buck they saw. And they did some scouting too. Most of my dad and my brother took some time off to head up there and scout it out. They saw some good bucks. They put some I'm not sure if they put cams up or something, but they did do some cam work. I want to say kind of got familiar with the area the past, you know, a couple months before the hunt started, and they got it done the first day. So kind of sad to get that call, you know, at the same time, happy, got the pick and everything. So I was not there to share it, but you know, once he brought it down and putting this, that same buck, you know, in my hands and holding it, man, it's a trophy itself too. Some good mass.
Yeah. And well, shit, it's 200-inch like buck.
200-inch buck, man. It has a width too.
Like yeah, he's got kickers. That big wide.
See if I can get a little bit more better of a view.
Oh yeah, I didn't see the kickers. That's pretty sweet.
See the kickers there, and then it's heavy. Pretty wide too. He's super heavy from the bases.
Yeah.
And our taxidermist, it's I forgot his last name. His name is Chris. He's a tax or a he's in Flagstaff anyway. He did a good job on the mount because he asked for like the, you know, the big and mature rut type of, you know, neck and Roman nose, mm-hmm. older type of buck, which he did a great job, you know, compared to the coos buck right next to it, which looks, you know, like a little
yeah
compared to it. But for most guys, you know, all my Arizona boys, they know what a big coos buck looks like. That one's he went that's 106.
I was gonna say that's a good buck. That's a real good buck, man.
It's actually my biggest. I'm looking. I still haven't broke the 110 mark yet, but
neither have I. Don't feel bad. And I got quite a few years on you.
Shoot, you know how it is. It's a work in progress, but that's a rifle buck too. Down here in these, I hunt a lot of 32, 33, you know, 31. Yeah, these lower southern units for especially down by Hayden, Arizona. A lot of coos hunting and, you know, rifle long shots, so that's my fun too. And then of course you have that archery, you know, in case it's always like a plan B, you know, if you don't get drawn for that rifle hunt that you put in for, you know, mm-hmm. get that over the counter tag, hit archery, and then you still have a even more of a better chance. You're gonna, you know, you have multiple species to hunt that coos versus, you know, and the mule deer as well. So
yeah,
it's always a plus.
I'm actually going to be in your backyard. Let's see, the 17th, my nephew. Well, I'm hoping if I could get there, because I'm going to be, like I said, I'm going to South Dakota. When I get back, that hunt starts that day. He's got the Unit 33 muzzleloader coos deer hunt. This is his first hunt ever. I don't know why his dad put him in for the muzzleloader, but he put him in for the muzzleloader by accident, I think. Anyhow, but yeah, that should be a good hunt. We'll see if we can pick him up a coos buck down there.
That's awesome. So, that's awesome. That's coming up.
I'm going to go shoot him out of Dwayne's backyard.
Yeah, Dwayne's right there. Pick Dwayne up and have him tag along with you guys. That's always a fun hunt, 233s. So much deer in that area too. So much deer and, you know, chances to, especially for a first-time hunter. Yeah. Shoot, if it is muzzleloader, that's fine. There's a lot of deer in 33. I've always liked that area.
Yeah, no, it's good. Good time. I've done quite a bit of hunting there, and mostly in just January actually. So,
January, well, cool, man. Archery.
You got any other big hunts coming up, or?
Yeah. Let's see here. It's the 10th tomorrow. Actually, I'm gonna head out to 24B. My brother actually. Joseph, he has a 24B whitetail tag that starts up today. Oh, he's working good. Right now. He's working tomorrow. So my dad and I are going to head up tomorrow. Do a little scout trip and, you know, set up some camp spot. And, we're going to hit it hard on Sunday morning. Hopefully we're going to walk into a couple miles and we have a little game plan set up for us. Like I said, you know, get away from the road, walk in a little bit, hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, be a good spot to hold a bigger mature buck. So, hopefully, nice. Kind of unfolds in success. And he's been shooting too. He just got a new 257 Weatherby, which I haven't shot yet myself, but that shoots pretty smooth. He's ready to go. So, and I was going to ask you too, for your rifle hunts, what do you try to focus on using your weapon of choice, your rifle?
Right now, I have a Best of the West 300 Ultra Mag.
Sweet.
I love the gun. It's, you know, some people think it's a bit of an overkill, but when I shoot stuff, I don't, you know, I don't mind tracking with a bow because there's actually like good blood trail usually. But if you shoot when you're shooting long distance and you hit something and you know, it's a lot harder. I want to see the thing go down, you know, right then and there. I don't want to track things. Right. I don't like, you know, I like rounds that can buck the wind pretty good. So I shoot a 220 grain bullet. And it's just, it's super light setup. It's carbon fiber barrel, carbon fiber stock. And it's got the Husqvarna, scope on it, which drop compensated. So, you know, I just range it up, dial in the solution, and
good to go.
And there she goes, nice. Man. So it's kind of hard to beat that. I pretty much use it for everything. I mean, I have a couple other rifles, but I don't ever, they just collect and dust.
Nice. So nice. That'll get it done. Is that what you're going to use on this South Dakota hunt coming up too?
No, I'm going to be archery hunting.
Oh, going to be archery. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. So South Dakota is, it's rifle season when I go there, but rifle is a draw, but you can hunt during the rifle season with the over-the-counter archery tag.
Okay. Almost like the same thing here in Arizona then, right? You put in for a draw rifle and you still have the over-the-counter.
Okay. Sort of. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little different because it's like a first come first serve tag. It's not, it's over the, I say over the counter because they almost never sell out. Actually I should say I've never had them sell out, but I'm sure they have sometime, you know, in recent years back, they probably have at one point, but, yeah, so it's a neat setup. I'm excited. I'm excited to see a new place, go to a new place. And plus I haven't hunted private ground in a while. So, you know, it'd be nice not to be, you know, this is the other part. So the few times that I've gone in the last couple of years, you know, I'm bringing a knife to a gunfight, basically. You know, I'm the guy running around with his bow and arrow, and there's all these guys got tags running around with their rifles and bang, bang, pow, pow all over the place. But, you know, so now I'm gonna have the land to myself. I'm not going to have any competition. So, you know, it's just a matter of finding the right deer in the right spot and being able to execute. And so hopefully, hopefully I can make it happen. We'll see. I'm only going for 4 days, so it's not like I got a shit ton of time, but.
Right. Make it happen. Shoot, archery, like, you know, it is, it's could happen. The first, you know, first attempt could happen the last day and the last hour. So can let the hope for the stars align.
Yep, that's for sure. Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and spending some time with us. Like to have you back on. Maybe we'll chit chat a little bit about Coos Deer, since I know that's more your passion.
Absolutely. And,
yeah. Good luck out there, and hope your brother gets one. And you, are you guiding with Dwayne again on the late season?
On the late season, coming up in the Kaibab.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna be up there again. Shoot, I don't have any more time off from work, unfortunately. That's always been the burden, but I'll get up there. It's gonna be Thanksgiving hunt, so yes, yeah, who needs work? But yeah, I'm gonna head up. It starts pretty much Thanksgiving weekend, so I'm gonna head up right after work. I get that Thursday and Friday off. I'm gonna head up and just kind of help out. I don't have anyone to take out, unfortunately, but just kind of, you know, tag along, be an extra pair of eyes, and, you know, see what they can do. That's gonna be a little bit more of a enjoyable hunt, more, you know, they're in the rut up there. They're going to be, you know, walking around with the does and stuff. So more enjoyable, maybe get to road hunt a little bit, you know, get my feet some rest and see what we can do it there.
Nice. But,
yeah. Well, I didn't get myself. I don't have my tag myself. I didn't get drawn this year. I kind of went big on the draw. So I'll be out there in December with my bow, and I'll keep you posted on how it goes to you. And yeah, man, I do appreciate you having me on here. It was awesome to get to know you and talk some hunting. I'm always up for a little conversation about hunting, man.
Yeah, and if you wanted, I mean, now that I thought you still lived down there by Duane. You know, now that I know you're not terribly far. Santan's not too bad. I mean, if you want to get out during the, you know, late archery, I'm not going to be doing any archery during December because I actually have a December tag.
Nice. Where are you going to be at?
I got a 21 tag. Mule deer 21 tag.
Oh, nice. Maybe
one of the 10 or 15 guys, I think, or 15 tags, I think it is. Yeah.
I'm going to say those trophy hunts usually hold not even no more than about 35, 40 tags.
Yeah.
For that December hunt. That's awesome. Maybe I'll sneak in there and accidentally run into you or something. Hey.
There you go.
Sweet, man. Nice. Yeah. Man. Best luck to you on that hunt, and I'll keep you posted.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.